The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Boston Red Sox drop another one, a grand slam in the 10th inning as the Milwaukee Brewers win the series in Game 2. Aaron Civale absolutely looks like Cy Young against us, and despite a stellar performance from the arms on the team, the bats go limp again. Where do we start today?
If you can't put up a 4 or 5 spot on Aaron Civale, just go home. Just go home.
It wasn't like he looked particularly sharp. That's what I was noticing. You know, he hung quite a few fastballs around the waist. You really thought our guys could have done something. And it wasn't strikeout central like we've seen. And we just managed to find bad contact all night long.
Yeah, just another lame showing from the offense, which that's what they're used to. That's just what we've become accustomed to. It's just the offense goes out there, doesn't do anything, and then pitching staff somehow blows it at the end. It's the same story over and over again.
The same story very literally, too. Tonight, what were we? Let's see. 1 for 10 with runners in scoring position. It's just unacceptable. Thanks to a really great game by Marcelo Meyer, Trevor Story came up and left 5 runners on the base paths. And that's just miserable. Meyer, of course, got thrown out trying to tag up on a flyout. Ran to third, unfortunately got gunned down. A lot of people are split on that. I think in a vacuum, I disagree with being too aggressive there. But when you have Trevor Story and Abraham Toro hitting behind you, you've got to manufacture a run somehow. And, you know, Meyer tried, he failed, but the rest of the team didn't do much of a better job trying to really look like professional ball players. I mean, just limp is the only word that comes to mind for me. Meyer looked good. He looked fresh. He looks composed up there. I love what I've seen from him. At this point, just play the kids. I'm done with this.
Yeah, and that's what happens. That's why Meyer gets thrown out on that play, because as you said, he has to try and make something happen because no one else in the lineup is doing anything. It's, you know, every night now, it's just we're hoping that Duran and Devers carry the offense. Meyer is, you know, just getting his feet wet at the big league level. So this is part of my issue with the people, you know, and it happened after tonight's game. Said, oh, they need to call up Roman Anthony. I go, yeah, of course. We all want Roman Anthony up here. He's not going to alter the course of your season the way it's going right now. And what, so you want to put more pressure on another 20-year-old? Like, you can't keep doing this. At some point, the veterans on this team have to also carry the load. It can't just be the next wonder kid from AAA.
We had a nice conversation off the air last night. We ended the show and we were just kind of bouncing some stuff around, and Trevor Story, I think one way to shake things up, and this was one of the things I mentioned off the air last night, is to just simply get rid of him and don't even be soft about it. Just be straightforward. Make sure the team's around when it happens. Make it jarring. And if Breslow was the type, and I don't think he is this type, maybe he will be eventually, but who knows? But if he's the type that can walk into the clubhouse have a quick powwow and command the room, I think that would be really effective. And if you DFA Story and you just address everybody and say, listen, July is coming and we're going to have some tough decisions to make. Okay. If the future is winning, this group's going to stay together and we're going to do good things. If the future is losing, the tough decisions are going to get made. You know, guys, like, I don't know if we live in a world. 3 weeks ago, we lived in a world where you might be able to trade Duran, you know, because you got Abreu and you know, Anthony would be up. But with Bregman down and not scoring, I feel like a dumbass now. But anyway, I think just getting rid of Story, you're going to do it anyway. You're going to do it anyway, whether it's the first week of June, the first week of July, he's gone. Trevor Story isn't coming back. You know, 2021 Trevor Story, that was his last productive year by all intents and purposes. I would start there. And then tonight, eighth inning, two outs. I forget where the base runners were. I think there was one on third at least, maybe one on first. That's literally, as I tweeted, the worst case scenario. You need an insurance run so bad. And by the way, the one run you did score, you didn't deserve. You didn't. The runner came home on a wild pitch. You know, the Brewers gave you that run. You didn't earn it. They gave it to you. And Trevor Story goes up, two outs in the ninth, or two outs in the eighth, rather. Run doesn't come home. Or actually, I think it was it the ninth?
It was the
actually?
Ninth. Yeah, top of the ninth, two outs, man on second base, Story up. And what I want to know in that situation is, why not pinch hit? I would rather see Sogard at this point 10 out of 10 times, 100 out of 100 times in that situation than Trevor Story. It's just true. You know, Story over the past 30 games is slashing 127, 189, 161. There is no sample size within that time frame that you can even make an argument. You can't gerrymander a good stat line with that. It is such a bad sample that reflects so poorly on him, and he knows it, and it sucks because I like Story as a guy. But at a certain point, he's got to go the way of Rusney Castillo. If you want to stay in the organization, if you want a chance to fix yourself, just take the waiver wire like a man. Go down to AAA, hang out with the guys, give them some of your leadership, and try to fix your swing, man, because something's wrong.
Yeah, and at this point, you know, I said a couple weeks ago that if Trevor Story would pick up a first baseman's glove and just move over there, that might save his career a little bit because you just, you know, it keeps him in the lineup. There's a gaping hole at first base. Abraham Toro's a better hitter than Trevor Story right now. And he's probably a better first baseman, period. So I don't think even that would save Trevor Story. And yeah, why not? You know, you had no problem pinch running for Narvaez the other night, which bit you in the ass. So why not overmanage here and pinch hit for Story? You're right. Like, Sogard is limited, but he gives you a professional at bat every single time. Trevor Story does not. Trevor Story is giving you non-competitive, useless at bats. So in that situation where you're starved for offense, like, yeah, do it. Pinch hit him, see if he can get something else. But no, instead, this time Cora decides to be hands off and let Trevor Story hit in a high leverage situation. And it didn't work because it never does.
Let's talk about Marcelo Meyer. 5 for 15. So he's batting, 333. Drew his first walk tonight. He's only struck out three times. Two of those strikeouts were actually in his very first game. So not striking out at a big clip here. And short sample size, and I think I said in the war room last night, I'm not going to drink the punch because I pounded that punch the first week and a half of the season when Campbell looked like the next coming of Mookie or whoever. And he did have a hit tonight. I actually missed that because it must have happened in the first or second inning. But But Meyer has looked good. He looks really good in the plate, really comfortable. He's doing exactly what I scream from the mountaintops that I just simply want all these guys to do. Just put it in play. The home runs will come. And he is putting them in play. And he even had that last hit he got tonight was off a lefty. It was kind of a bloop single, but it was a hit. And, you know, he wasn't overmatched, you know, in that at bat. And then you've got a guy who might be even better than him hitting a home run in Worcester tonight. So, or wherever they were, I don't know if they were home or away, but you know, I posted before the game, I posted the lineup, and then I put at the very top was Duran and then Devers. And then I put an asterisk after everybody on it as I went down it. And then at the bottom, what the asterisks were for was Anthony is probably better than any of these guys, and he's not on the lineup. So, you know, the lineup's not getting it done. The manager's not getting it done, and the front office isn't getting it done. Nobody's getting it done. It's just one big clown show from top to bottom.
And, you know, Trevor Story right now, I think, is a bit of a lightning rod because there's another guy who we need to discuss. Why is he on the team right now? And unfortunately, it's Liam Hendricks. He looked terrible in extras tonight. He has really struggled this entire season. I thought that there were a couple flashes throughout sort of his first few appearances where I was like, okay, maybe this guy can come back. Maybe this guy sort of has something left in the tank. And unfortunately, it's just not looking that way. I think you cut your losses. I would rather have Guerrero. I would rather have Criswell. I would rather have Penrod. I would rather have a lot of people right now, because at least with them, just like with Meyer and Anthony and Campbell, at least there's maybe some upside of the unknown. You don't know what these guys can do just yet. I think we know what Hendricks can do, and it is unfortunately lose baseball games.
Yeah, that's tough for Hendricks too, because days after you come out and bitch about your usage and say, oh, they're not pitching me enough. Okay, well, here you go. They pitched you in a high leverage situation in extra innings. And how did that go? He gave up a freaking grand slam. It's not like he got beat by, like, you know, a seeing eye single where you go, oh, okay, bad luck, or, you know, an error or something. No, he got taken to the moon tonight. So he needs to get himself sorted. He needs to stop talking so much and just figure out how to get his fastball back, because that's quickly disappearing on him. And just sort of, you know, go out there and just get some clean innings under you before you start, you know, yelling at management about your usage and, oh, you know, if you want to pitch me, you got to pitch me the right way. Like, go screw, dude. Like, you suck.
I agree. I can't stand it when, you know, I mean, at least he ate some humble pie pretty much immediately. It's a shame because I like him as a dude. I love his personality. He's electric, and he's had that sort of edge that I feel like we've been missing to some extent on this team. But I mean, if you can't back it up with good gameplay, that's the end.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and it's a great story, you know, what he's been through and what he's overcome. But yeah, you got to pick your spots if you're going to complain about the way you're being used so far. So bad moment for him, but as you said, he's quickly eating the humble pie. So hopefully he gets his head out of his ass and straightens it out a little bit.
I wouldn't necessarily, you know, cut him, but he definitely needs to not be in the eighth or ninth inning anymore. And tonight, it was what it was. You only got three innings from Richard Fitz because he wasn't stretched out, and you're just going to blow through relievers at that point. He was the last guy available. And I rather would have had everybody else in front of him. I mean, we did have a lead in the ninth inning, and, you know, Chapman didn't have his best outing, but I still put it more on the offense. We should have put up a few more runs. So it was just kind of unfortunate, but, you know, you do need arms in that pen. And, you know, if you can find a sixth or seventh inning, you know, whether we're just, you know, even if we're behind by a few runs and you want to just see what he has, or if you're up by several, not that that's happened in a while, that would be another spot. But high leverage spots isn't a good place for him. You know, he's 37 years old, hasn't pitched a full season in 3 or 4 years. You know, he had the cancer battle for a while, which luckily, you know, was in check and they were able to take care of it. And then the Tommy John happened after that. So kind of a tough luck way to possibly end his career. But man, you know, we have had bullpen problems this year, but right now it's the offense. Outside of that 19 run game against Baltimore, I don't think we've scored more than 3 runs. I don't think. Well, maybe we won one other game against Baltimore, so perhaps we did there, but by and large, we're just not putting up runs, and it's not fair to this pitching staff to have to walk that tightrope every night.
Yeah, I agree. And this is something a friend of mine sent me yesterday, actually, another big Sox fan. And, you know, he compared us to the Diamondbacks and the Phillies, because I think I mentioned yesterday how you look at the Sox overall numbers offensively, and we're a top 10 offense in a lot of categories, but it sure doesn't feel like it. And he sort of went through and counted the number of games that the three teams, the D-backs, the Phillies, and the Red Sox, have scored 0-4 runs, 5-9 runs, and 10-plus runs. And we have, at least as of yesterday, we have one more 10-plus run game than the D-backs, 4 more than the Phillies. The problem is that we have 8 more games than both of them in that 0-4 range. And it just really goes to show the hot and cold nature that we've been flashing all year long. And as guys go down, and of course, as Bregman goes down, we just have had no answers to that, no flexibility. It seemed like we came into the season with depth at the starting rotation level, some depth at the bullpen level, depth in the outfield. But when it comes to the actual infielders, what do we have? We have Sogard and Toro, apparently. And now we are unfortunately suffering the repercussions of that.
The issue, too, is the lineup is just filled with guys who are naturally streaky. I mean, even Duran and Devers go through their fits where they're not hitting. And if those two don't hit, then nobody does. I mean, if Duran and Devers aren't producing offense for you, you don't have offense on this team. But David Hamilton, like, you know, sort of a bench guy, but like, he's super streaky. He looked awful to start the season. Like, he looked like he forgot how to hit. And then he went on a streak where he was hitting like 350 over a 7-game stretch, and you go, okay, Hamilton's back. Same with Abraham Toro. He's going to go through his struggles. He's not a true everyday player. He's a platoon guy. When you put platoon guys in everyday situations, they get exposed. Pitchers figure them out. They're platoon guys for a reason. They're easy to figure out. So he's going to go through stretches. Even Willie Abreu goes through his stretches where he doesn't hit and he strikes out a ton and he's useless against lefties. And so when you have a lineup that's filled with streaky guys, that's what's going to happen. Yeah, you might have a 19-run game where everything's just firing on all cylinders, but for the most part, you're going to go through 4 or 5-game stretches where you're barely squeaking out a run or you're barely squeaking out 2 runs. That's not sustainable winning baseball. It just isn't. So it's a problem with the roster. It's a problem with how the lineup is constructed. And this is just kind of what you get. I think that we sort of overrated the offense going into the season because we all thought Connor Wong was going to hit 270 with power. He's just lost his job. And we're lucky that Carlos Narvaez seems like he can hit, but I guarantee you that guy's going to go through a stretch where he doesn't hit either. Like, this is not going to last from Carlos Narvaez. Sorry. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news there. I love the guy, but he's going to go through a stretch where he stops hitting. And then the young kids, we're seeing it with Christian Campbell. He's going through a horrible stretch right now. It's going to happen to Marcelo Meyer too. He's going to go through a rookie slump. They all do. This is the problem with, you know, putting so much weight on those kids' shoulders is that they're still trying to figure it out at the big league level. They're going to go through stretches like that. So it's everything from the roster construction to the lineup. It's too streaky. It's not sustainable. And it's a big reason why I just, you know, they're going to really struggle. If they make the playoffs somehow, if they get that third wild card or whatever, they're going to have to really scrap and claw to get there.
Where do you think we are in the AL East standings right now?
Fourth.
Fourth place.
We are in fourth. Yeah. Three games under 500. I guess I made an error in the title. I thought we'd lost five straight, but it is only four straight. But Baltimore's in the basement. Toronto is ahead of us because they're only two games under 500. The Rays are an even 500, and they are surging, and everything's clicking at the right time. They've got that second baseman, Aranda. I snagged him in fantasy, and he's just been absolutely destroying it. I haven't checked the metrics for second baseman right now, but he's probably one of the best in the league, if not the best. And they've got all their pitching back. So I'll say this right now for the first time. I trust Tampa to win the division more than I trust the Yankees. Because when Yankees pitching starts to stumble a little bit, when that Will Warren guy goes through a bad stretch, I don't root injuries for anyone, and what Judge is doing is amazing. But if he does get hurt, that's going to be extremely catastrophic. I just think the Rays quietly will they could win over 90 easily.
And guess what I noticed the Rays just did today? They traded for a player, Matt Thace.
I saw that. Yeah. Catcher.
Yeah, catcher, first baseman, and third baseman he's played in the past. And right now, I mean, the on-base is unsustainable. He's currently at 382, but he is a guy who's always walked a lot in his career. And I'll tell you, we could use some of that in this offense. We had two walks tonight. It seems like we chase every pitch there is. It's so frustrating. And, you know, Toro has had flashes, but his chase rate, I believe, is third worst on the team right now. It's comparable, honestly, to Rafaela's, who's like historically a chaser when it comes to those things. He will swing at anything, you know, and we just don't need more of that, because when a pitcher is off, when he's throwing meatballs down the middle, even tonight, I mean, you'd think we could have done something with it, but you're going to be able to swing aggressively and hit those out of the park. But if a guy really has his stuff, if he's throwing breaking balls, if he's, you know, painting around the edges of the zone, you've got to be willing to take a ball. You've got to be willing to take a walk. And it just seems like so many guys on the team are petrified of the very idea. I remember, you know, reading Moneyball, and I think that in order to instill that type of thing in their minor leaguers, they like paid them or something for every walk they got in a game. They would pay them some, you know, just a small little bonus. And I don't know, maybe we need to bring that back. Maybe all those cash considerations we just got for Sean Newcomb can go towards something like that, because it seems like aside from Devers, you know, no one's walking right now.
Devers has an on base over 400 at the moment, which is crazy. But yeah, you know, I look at Rafaela and I'm like, can I just live with that? Like, is that okay in the nine hole? I mean, you could do worse, right? But at the same time, it's just like, dude, settle down, just settle down. Be patient. Like, you may as well just, if Manfred really wants to speed games up, just pass a rule where Rafaela has to start 0-2, because it's going to happen anyway. He's going to get there. The count's going to be 0-2. Maybe he shoots one up the gap or just absolutely destroys one. I think he had a ground rule double, didn't he? Down the left field line. It hopped over the wall. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes he can, like I said, run into one, but that is what he is. And his saving grace is that he's one of the very few right-handers on this team. So theoretically, he's safer than, I would say, Willy or Abreu when Anthony gets called up.
Yeah, and I don't understand, like, what's preventing the Red Sox from potentially making a small trade like that. I know they've done a few things. They picked up that Ryan Noda kid from, I believe, Oakland. He's a 29-year-old journeyman, left-hand hitting first baseman. He strikes out an ungodly amount. So Like, that's more, I think that was more of a depth move because they just don't have much depth at first base, even in AAA. But yeah, why not go, like, at this point, now with June 1st right around the corner, teams are willing to make deals, especially the ones that are in the basement, not going anywhere. I said a month ago when Costas got hurt and everyone said, oh, just call up the Nationals and have them trade you Nathaniel Lowe. I'm like, they're not going to do that. Like, it's early May. No one's trading. But now with June 1st around the corner, now you can start making some deals. Now you can start to identify teams that are willing to sell off, that, you know they're not competing this year. Are the options going to be great? No, because you're fishing from barrels like Miami and Colorado. I don't think Baltimore will trade with you. I think Baltimore still thinks they can turn this around, but which, good luck. But yeah, so the options aren't great, but you can absolutely go and make a deal somewhere. Just get a little bit of something going on, because it feels like now they're just complacent. It's like, I'll just try out the same lineup and we'll just sit here and wait for the offense to wake up. That'll work, right? Like, no, you've got to be proactive and do something here. You cannot miss the playoffs again. Not after the offseason you had, not with all the hype around your young kids. Like, you can't do that. You've got to find a way to turn this around.
Yeah, and I think it starts with Meyer at shortstop every day. We really need to stop appeasing Trevor Story. I'm sorry. It is just a black hole. It's black hole defensively, offensively, on the base paths. The guy just cannot buy a win right now. With Rafaela, at least you have that platinum glove defense out in center field. Obviously, he made a flub tonight, which was very uncharacteristic. It's going to happen to everyone. But typically, just an incredible center fielder, great on the base paths, and versatile. You know, he can play shortstop or third base or second base in a pinch. I had no problem with JBJ on the team. I loved JBJ, as a matter of fact. I love having that style of player, you know, who offers something that, you know, sure, he might not be great offensively, but he'll go on his runs. He'll get his hot month out of the year, and the whole time he's going to be on run suppression. Story is not doing that, you know, quite frankly. At this point, Meyer shortstop, Rafaela third base almost makes more sense, just to get Anthony up here, get his feet wet, because at this point I am trying to minimize the damage to 2026. Make sure these rookies get as much seasoning as possible so we can hopefully go out and win it next year. That's still very possible. This year, our window's closing. It's getting ugly.
Jason was the president of the anti-JBJ movement, just so you know. But anyway, but thanks for, you know, 2018 ALCS. Where was I going? Oh, yeah. I think I found an alignment I like. Okay. Rafaela, bring him into second. I mean, I don't love it, but that's his best infield position. He wasn't quite as good playing short last year, or was it the year before when they were moving him around so much? Campbell over to first, and then Meyer or Sogard or whatever on the left side. I don't care where Meyer plays because he's good at both. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, he's a little bit injury prone. Maybe third base, kind of, maybe that keeps him healthy. I don't know. It's less, you know, you're just knocking down line drives basically and shipping the ball to second or first. But I would do that. So Campbell, Rafaela, Meyer, Sogard. Let's just go with that for now, I guess. And then in your outfield, you got Duran and Anthony every single day. Duran and Anthony every single day. And then you can still use the platoon of Abreu and Russ Snyder. And I think that's your simplest way to do it. If you're not, you really need to make a trade to get a right-handed bat. But if you don't want to do it, then that's how I would run it.
Yeah, and it's tough because I'm not thrilled with the idea of putting Campbell at first. I already hate how much they've screwed around with his positioning to start with. But if he can learn first base, and if he gets comfortable with it, that does make the most sense. Maybe, you know, maybe if they just say, hey, look, you got to learn first and you're going to stay there the rest of the year. We're not going to put you in center field randomly. They gotta, and that's the thing. Like, they have to sit Alex Cora down and be like, can you stop? Like, stop putting him in center field. He's not good there. Stop putting him in center. If you want to make him a first baseman, fine. But you're keeping him at first base. You are not moving him anywhere else. And then if he's comfortable with it and maybe his bat comes back a little bit, I think that would really help. Because otherwise, you're right, Terry, they got to make a trade. It's either that or you got to trade for a right-handed hitting first baseman. You saw one these past 2 days who might be available, and you've done a ton of deals with the Brewers in the past. Might give them a call about Rhys Hoskins. I don't know.
Well, the sad thing is we're getting them right back in it. I think they're, I had the standings up, but they might only be one game under 500 at this point.
Yeah, I believe they're doing better than we are.
Yeah, and let me just look at the Central real quick. The Cubs. I keep forgetting about the Cubs. Okay, I was thinking the Cardinals were in first. So the Cubs are probably there to stay, I would think, at this point. I don't love their rotation, but man, that lineup, especially with Pete Crow Armstrong kind of emerging. And I think the Cardinals will fall on their face, but the Reds, you know, with Francona, they've got a 500 record. And actually the Brewers do have a 500 record. I thought they might be one under, but that Central race is interesting. And the point I was getting at is the Red Sox are kind of putting the Brewers back into it here. So I don't know how likely they would be willing to trade Hoskins this early. Maybe it's a July move if they start sputtering again. But, you know, I mentioned, well, Jim actually originally mentioned Adolis Garcia, and his numbers aren't super great, but he is a power threat from the right side. Peter Fatsy stocks a little low. If this was last year, I'd be like, oh, Fatsy might be able to fix him, but I won't go there. And then Ryan Mountcastle, if you want to go the cheap route where you don't give up anything, he's not doing good this year, but has okay career numbers, serviceable. And, you know, maybe Fenway Park would energize him, but you have to do something. Like, you're three under now. You can't wait till July because you're going to be 12 under. And then we're going to be having different conversations. You have to do it now. Like, it's incumbent upon Craig Breslow to prove that he can be a great executive in Boston. You know, Bloom, unfortunately, well, he had one deep run, I guess, in October, but every executive before Bloom has at least one ring. And Breslow's not a good problem solver. So far, not a good problem solver.
What I'm worried about is that we're going to hear the same old song and dance that we've heard the last 3 years. How many times have we heard, maybe even longer than that, how many times have we heard, oh, don't worry, the cavalry's coming. The injured list, guys are getting healthier, they're going to return, and that's just as good as a trade deadline if you think about it, and it never is. I really am worried that that's going to be where we go because, you know, Fitz is coming back. I'm excited for that. When Crawford eventually comes back, I've got hope for him, but you need impact players who weren't on the opening day plan. We were thrown a bone, a golden opportunity with the Orioles just dying on their sword like they have. And I would have given a generous amount considering that, you know, his contract is up at the end of the year for Ryan O'Hearn. That would have been a great bat here. I was saying when Baltimore was in Fenway, don't let them leave with Ryan O'Hearn on the plane. And we did. And it just seems like by the time the actual deadline comes about, we're kind of going to be out of the conversation at that point.
I really think. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Terry.
I was just going to quickly say, you know, Craig Breslow is the type of guy where, you know, he accidentally lights the kitchen on fire and then waits 30 minutes to call the fire department for some reason. That's what we got in the front office.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. And I think, Nick, you're spot on. Like, I can already hear that, well, Alex Bregman was our deadline acquisition. That's our right-handed power bat that's going back. It's like, They do it every year. Every year we sit here and we say, you got to make a big trade, and they never do. It's always just an internal thing or an injury return. They go, yep, that was our trade deadline. That And we feel like that was more productive than giving up prospect capital for, you know, an unknown. Like, it's so pathetic. And they will. They'll do it again. They will absolutely do it again.
I got an idea. If Cora and Breslow aren't getting along, just sneak Roman Anthony into the clubhouse. Give him Nick Sogard's uniform. Dye his hair if it has to be. And yeah, make history. I don't know. That's where we're at right now.
A little parent trap situation.
I don't know what else you do, man. I mean, Theo like got so frustrated with the front office around him, he put on a gorilla suit and peaced out for like a month and came back and magically had Josh Beckett and Mike Lowell, because the three other guys were the co-GMs, three of them literally. I don't even know their names. And Hanley was gone, which I guess Theo didn't want to part with him, but thank goodness, because, you know, Beckett and Lowell were so critical for 07 and kept us pretty competitive beyond that. But I don't know. I don't know what to do. We have over 600 live viewers right now. That's just, that's, we're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're the OG Red Sox truthers. So I think people are figuring that out. I think every podcast, though, is kind of turned against them.
Like, I don't know how you can't at this point. You know, yeah, it really is staring you right at the face. An ugly truth, a bitter pill to swallow. I mean, you know, Charlie started drinking early, right? Is that what he said? He was
Charlie drinking early today. He doesn't typically drink, but he you're not going to see him in the war room a ton in the during the week. And he was fired up. And he was as fired up on Sunday night show or Monday morning, whenever anyone listened, more so than usual. So,
yeah, and he called it. It was the called shot in the war room. Jim posted a screenshot of it. He said, as soon as the bases got loaded, we're going to lose via grand slam. Just watch this. You know, grand slam incoming. I forget exactly how he worded it. And when that ball went in the air and I saw the outfielders give up on it, my mind was blown. And all I could do, I started laughing. It's really getting to that point where it's just like, of course we lose that way. You know, we're the only team that could take a one run victory and turn it into a 5-1 loss.
Yeah, I mean, that ball it didn't have to even go over the fence. The infield, the outfield was in, and I don't even think we had a center fielder.
It was only one out, so, you know, a sack fly even ends the game right there. It was just insult to injury.
Yeah, and it jacked up Hendricks' ERA way worse because it went over the fence. If it would have hit the grass, it would have, on paper, it wouldn't have looked so bad, but... All right, let's just get into tomorrow real quick. We've got Brian Bayo. I'm fairly certain going on short rest. Didn't he pitch Friday, I want to say? So, I mean, he might have a short outing whether he likes it or not. And he's going up against Freddie Peralta. Let's pull up his last few starts. One earned in each of his last two. Three starts ago against Cleveland, gave up a four spot, but Peralta hasn't been punching guys out. So if you can just like I said, make contact, put it in play. It doesn't even have to be hard contact. We can go back to being that dynamic base running team again. But I don't know.
He's a true ace, and that probably means we're going to choose that game to put up 9 runs or something. At this point, I mean, you can't get swept. Come on, you just can't get swept, but you can sort of feel it coming, can't you? You know, it's like I think Phil Collins said, right? You can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, Lord, it is an ugly thing that we're staring down the barrel of right now.
I said last night we're getting swept, so.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way. Peralta is their ace. He's nasty. To Nick's point, I could see them actually putting up like 4 or 5 runs. It's just what this stupid team does. But I don't trust Brian Bayo as far as I can throw him. He's going to have a bad inning, and it's going to get in his head. and his pitch count's going to be too high. Cora's going to pull him because Cora's going to get frustrated with him. It's just that those two, that back and forth keeps going. So, yeah, I don't trust Brian Bayo. I think he's going to have a rough outing, and I think they're going to get swept. And they, you know what? They deserve it. They do.
Maybe the Dominator can come in and save the game a little bit, but we'll see. You know, one thing I'd like to throw out just before we conclude, bastardsofbostonbaseball.substack.com. Check it out. Jim and Chris are going crazy, publishing articles almost every day over there, if not every day.
Every hour.
If you want more of this style of content and you want it in print form, please go check it out. It's really growing quick.
I'm trying to post two a week. I posted one Monday. I'm hoping to drop another one on Thursday. So we'll see. But yeah, so we'll be back tomorrow night. Totally different crew. I think you're going to have Jim, Jeremy, and I don't think I'm on for that. Am I? I don't think so. I don't have the schedule up, but oh, it's Chris. Jim, Jeremy, and Chris. That's the rotation. Chris is on the injured list, but I'm an old school manager, so I'm starting him tomorrow. But anyway, everyone, enjoy the 4-game losing streak, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.